Welcome to the Kickstart Podcast. On this episode, we have the pleasure of hosting someone who is an avid ice hockey competitor, airborne ranger, and is now the owner and operator of Laboris Tech, a recruiting agency in Sweden. Zach, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Preston. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is mine. I guess a fitting way to get started, I did my best to hit on some of the cool points of your background. But for those who are unfamiliar with you and your background, would you mind just sharing a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, of course. Well, you've got a pretty good introduction of me right off the bat. So as you said, ex-airborne ranger. I worked in the military for 4 years, done both international and national operations. Right now, I own my recruitment agency, Laboris Tech, where we usually help kind of a bit startup, like 10 to 15 employees to help them with their tech recruitment. That's what we specialize in. We specialize in usually modern tech. That's our strong point. Besides that, I play ice hockey at a semi-professional level for Hammarby, which is a pretty big team over here in Sweden. They with a big background actually. So that's a bit about myself. Live in Stockholm. Yeah, good start.
Nice. Yeah, sure is. So a lot of things I want to talk to you about. So number one, you're obviously in Stockholm, Sweden, for those who are listening for the first time. Have you lived there your whole life?
Well, I was actually born in Colombia. I was born in Bogota. After a couple of years, my father worked for a company named AGA, which is like a gas company. So we moved around a lot. So we moved around to Argentina. And then we lived 3 years in Puerto Rico. Then we moved back to Sweden, so to say. And I actually lived 1 year in the States playing ice hockey in Florida. So that's kind of where my American accent kind of comes from.
For sure. And so how did you get into ice hockey?
So when we moved to Sweden, I was just turning 7, and like all the kids on the street got like a letter in the mail, like, you should start playing ice hockey. That was around my age. And so my neighbor was going to start, and we were right about the same age. And so his mom told my mom, like, you should put Zach in. It's a good time for him, I guess. And that's how the journey started. So I started playing there and started getting a hang of it, like when I was around 12 years old, and starting developing a lot. Went to a high school specialized in hockey. So I moved 5 hours up north in Sweden just to play ice hockey. Lived there for myself from when I was 15 to 18. And then I moved to the US afterwards. So that's a bit about my journey, but it's a tough journey being playing at a high level, actually. It's a long way there. Just like in business, it's a long road.
For sure. And you said that you're at the semi-professional level?
Yeah, so it's a semi-professional level. Mm. So it's the third league in Sweden. So it's not like a full-time gig, but I do it. It's mostly part-time. We practice almost every single day, every night. It's a lot of time that goes on still after all.
I'm sure it's a great way to decompress after like a tough recruiting day, maybe with a client or a candidate. You just go on, put your skates on, and you just vent it out, right? With your teammates.
Yeah, most definitely. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really nice because you speak to people that are you become super super close to each other, but at the same time everyone is so different. Like everybody does a different thing during the day. Like some people go to school, others like work in construction, some work at sales at some part. So everybody just does different things. So there's always things to talk about. And like something that is always reoccurring is the hockey thing. Like everybody has a fun time. Like there's still laughter. It's still really competitive. So it's actually like a really good thing to get your mind off things.
I have to now ask about the park ranger, Zach. I think obviously I want to talk and dig a lot more about your business and recruiting, but you having a park ranger background, airborne ranger, is so cool. So is that something that's required for men living in Sweden? I know obviously me being Korea, they have a national conscription service out there where I think at a certain age you have to go into the army. So is that the same thing there, or did you just apply because that's something you want to do? Like, tell us about it. I would love to hear about
that. Yeah, of course. Of course. So around, I think it's now 5 years ago, they made it mandatory for Swedish guys and females going out of high school to do at least like a pre-testing and see if you have the qualifications to do some kind of military duty in some part. So it's like a first step inside of it. So that is mandatory. But being picked out, it's usually like the people that actually want to do it, that actually have the qualifications and actually feel like it's relevant to do it. Because as of right now, we only have like, I think it's 4,000 people that do it each year. So it's not a whole lot, but it's like the ones that want to do it will have a spot to do it. And it's usually around like 4,000 to 5,000 that actually want to do it going off of high school. It's kind of mandatory because once you start it, you have to finish it, or it can become some consequences. It's kind of in the middle. But when I did it, I actually wanted to do it. It's a really good experience. Like, you get to know yourself at a whole nother level, and it brings out like everything from leadership to how to handle like tough times, being cold, being wet, like everything surrounding that. It actually helps out a lot. Only doing like it's from 9 months to a year is the mandatory, and then afterwards I'm done going with my military duty. I got assigned at a special ranger unit and just kept on doing it, but mostly as a like full-time gig instead.
That's so cool. And how is like, what does it mean to be a ranger? Like, how is that different from all the other military units in the army?
Yeah. So being a military ranger, it's a bit more on your physical aspects and also your mental aspects. So it's usually being in the army is usually like you probably have a bigger group, but this is small groups doing like smaller tasks behind enemy lines. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of everything from like gathering information to destroying different parts to having like smaller direct action behind enemy lines. So we usually worked in groups of 7 to 8. So it's pretty small groups, and everyone is specialized in some kind of way. So it's a larger aspect on your physical health, because you usually are out for 7 days to 2 weeks, and without like having maybe connection towards a main base or something surrounding that. And you're also, well, your supplies aren't that big. It's a larger thing physically than most army positions.
I appreciate you sharing your previous examples, obviously touching upon ice hockey, which you still do in a part-time capacity, and obviously you being an airborne ranger. I can see a lot of similarities on like what the physical, the psychological, the emotional kind of foundations you have to build and strengthen being a high level athlete to be in a very kind of well-respected kind of military unit like the ranger, and be able to leverage those skills into business, right? Because in business, you're always working with the unknown. There's a lot of chaos. You have to have attention to detail, but you also have to be physically, mentally, and emotionally strong. So now segueing into kind of your recruiting and business sector, how helpful was it for you to have a previous kind of athletic background and military background coming into business?
I would say that is one of like the best aspects of myself. When I see myself as a recruiter, I can understand people really good because I've been through different things together with different people. Like my whole background, I've done things together with a team, either if it's my hockey team or if it's my ranger unit. Like, we always did things together, and cooperation is like the most important part out of it. So like being on interviews, like understanding that everybody that you interview is different in some way, and you got to take out the strong parts out of them. Yeah, that is something that that really helps me a lot, especially in my recruitment, but also just being able to handle like multiple tasks at the same time, especially in the military, like everything with structure, having your bag packed in a special way. Like it's exactly like my Excel documents. They're at the same way. Like, so I always have like different structures inside of it, which helps out a lot. Also like everything from process to solutions, like always seeing a solution inside of it and not being afraid of anything surrounding that. That is something that actually helps out a lot. But also like how you speak to people, like speaking to a hiring manager, how am I supposed to handle the information that I take in and the information that I give out? Those aspects is actually something that helps out a lot.
I always say that it's very easy to come into recruiting, but it's very difficult to do recruiting well, right? And I think if you're working for yourself, especially on the staffing side, going a million miles a minute, you're juggling 30 different things at the same time. And if you're not organized, if you don't have that previous experience or background in just creating really great systems or process structure, you can get overwhelmed very quickly or start losing a lot of important details. So I can already see like how your previous examples and previous lives as an athlete, military, can just help you become like a recruiting superstar and just set you on the right track to success. Now, before I kind of go in, I am curious though, how did you get into recruiting? It's not like you had a recruiting job and then you're like, you know what? I kind of want to bet against myself and start my own thing. Like, how did you get into recruiting and why did you end up working for yourself instead of like getting a job? Have you always been entrepreneurial? Is that something that you've always wanted to do? I'd love to learn more.
Yeah, of course. So it's actually a pretty, pretty funny story. When I was out on an international operation, I was starting to feel like this is like the last thing I'm going to do in the military. So I was starting to think about, I had a lot of time to read and think about myself, like where I want to see myself in a couple of years. So I started to like pinpoint out exactly what I want to do with my life. And something that I've always wanted to do is own my own company and be my own boss in some way, build my own structure, build my own processes, and do something for myself mostly. So I started thinking about like what could be a good business model. So I, as I told you, I read a lot of books and tried to like figure out what I could actually be good at. What type of skill sets do I have? And something that I am pretty good at is everything from jobs. Like I was pretty good at like writing resumes. I usually helped out like friends writing resumes when I was younger, because I understood like what type of things you wanted to bring out from your resume. I'm pretty good at talking to people. I love this interaction at an everyday thing. So I started thinking like what could I do with that? I also love tech. Like tech is like the industry that I wanted to be in. My father having a background as an IT leader, doing different leadership positions inside of it. So I started to figure it out, like in small ways, like what I wanted to do with it. Got in touch with a couple of contacts inside of the recruitment agency or recruitment industry. From there, I kind of figured it out that it's tech recruitment that I want to do. I started figuring out, like taking out the good parts from different models and so on. And that is basically how I started with it. I had like no real like prior experience to it, but I knew how to build up processes, and I had a really good helping hand with like different mentors inside of it. So I understood like how the whole 360 worked out, everything from the sourcing stage to like the presentation stage to like when it goes on to dealing and to hiring stuff. Mm-hmm. So I understood like the whole process inside of it. And that is basically how it started. And then it just started from everything from cold calling to like LinkedIn messaging to different new clients, and then it started going on, and now it is what it is. Like 2 years later, it's coming to be a good agency where we actually have helped out a dozen clients to fill positions in different aspects, both like in harder position, like tech leadership positions, to like development positions. So it's been everything from like building a database with different candidates to building a client base.
I have to give your hats kudos to you, Zach, because I think if I were to go back in time myself, I don't know if I'd be able to just jump into running a staffing agency business without like a previous recruiting experience. So like for me, I learned because one of my first jobs was at a US staffing agency. So I learned all the tools, the systems, the know-hows. You were able to just kind of muscle your way in, being able to leverage mentors, being able to leverage like the skills, the hard and soft skills that you developed in the military and your previous experiences. But if you were to ever kind of go back in time, like what was the hardest thing that you had to learn doing this business without like official recruiting experience? Like it's conceptually, it's very easy to understand. You have to do cold calling, lead gen, you have to find candidates, put it together. But for someone coming in with no experience, no recruiting experience before, what was like the hardest thing in the early days that you had to be like, oh wow, like I have to now learn this, if any?
Well, there was a lot of hard things. Like I'm not gonna say that it was easy. I would say like the first year was super tough, like really tough, because you don't really have a name inside of the industry, and Sweden, it's pretty big, but it's not really that big either. So to like be able to get new clients and so on, you kind of have to know each other in some way or done business before, because they go a lot on references. So I would say, like, if I would have done it again, I would have started out at an agency first. Mm-hmm. Like build all the skill set, build the contacts that you need to kind of be self-efficient. Maybe like if I would have left that company, I probably would have 2-3 clients that I could have called and like started off like that. Because starting off with 0 clients and 0 people in a database, it's pretty hard to build that up. It took me over a year to like build out kind of like a stable, solid ground. And there was a lot of times that I was asking myself, is this really worth it? Am I doing the right things? Like, do I trust the process that I'm doing right now? And et cetera. So it's actually, it is a lot harder than what you believe by yourself. But then it starts ticking off. You start getting help from other recruiters. I start talking a lot to different freelance recruiters, and we kind of started helping out each other. And from there, like the bricks started falling, and then it just started taking off. So there's a lot of this different aspects, but something that I really take from everything that I've learned is take help from every side that you know. Like if you see another agency, don't feel like you're competing with like your competitors. Feel like, yeah, we can cooperate with some things. Like I've had a hard time finding this type of candidate, and they've had a hard time finding this type of candidate. Well, perfect. Let's help out each other. I maybe have a broader network inside of that. They probably have a broader network inside of the candidate that I'm looking mm-hmm. for. So just being open to everything and like not seeing each other as competitors, because that I would say is one of the best things that you can do. So that is something that I wish I've done earlier, just taking help from other companies at an earlier stage, or other freelancers at an earlier stage.
For sure. I'm happy you brought that up, because I know that like with me, I'm all about partnerships and splits with other recruiters. Like I think our industry is super fragmented. It's extremely competitive. Like all the agencies try to stay away from other agencies. They're protective over their clients, protective over their candidates. And I'm like, wait a second. I'm like, a lot of us are in the same market. And so there's a chance that like, if you find a candidate and you can't place them, there could be a chance that you can place them with another good partner. And yes, it's not going to be 100% of the commission. It's going to be probably 50%, but in my mind, 50% of something is still better than 100% of zero. right? Yeah. And if you do tech recruiting, the margins and the placements are still considerable. So even after splitting and you can do volume, it still could be extremely fulfilling. So I think that if done right, and again, emphasis on right, I think doing partnerships with bad recruiters or recruiters who play games or they're shady can be literally some of the worst things that you can do. It's a horrible experience. But if you find really good people and it's a mutual respect, trust, all in the spirit of collaborating, it could be amazing. It could be a great way to stabilize your business. It could be a great way to expand your network. It could be also a great way to present more opportunities to your candidates or more talent to your clients, making you just look better and more just credible in everyone's eyes. So in my mind, it's a win-win.
Yeah, most definitely. And also, like, I feel like, as we talked before, like freelance recruiters, I feel like usually know what clients are looking for at a broader aspect than usually like your agencies understand, because they have to do the whole 360 in it. They have to do everything from finding the client to finding the candidate to like negotiating everything surrounding that. So you kind of figure it out in a better aspect, knowing like the full cycle. Mm-hmm. So they understand what a good candidate is versus what is probably not as good as a candidate. So you understand it in a different aspect, which I would say actually helps out a lot, because taking help from if, so to say, bad recruiters, it actually hurts you, because you get candidates that you know that you can't place really, or they don't fulfill the criteria that you're looking for either. So I would say finding good people to surround yourself with is always good, even if you're your own agency.
Yeah, for sure. There are not that many other businesses out there that you can start and you can work with someone who does the same thing as you and partner and split and collaborate, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very unique thing here in the recruiting sector. Now, I have to backtrack a little bit and ask you just about the early days. Now, you said that you have always been interested and passionate in tech. Now, what like specific... Were you like, did you focus on a specific position in the early days, or did you do like all positions within tech? Like, what's your forte? What's your bread and butter? How did you choose these positions? Yeah. And what are you doing now? Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, of course. So like in the beginning, I was just trying to get clients, as everyone is. So I just said that I was specialized inside of tech recruitment, which if I would have done it again, so to speak, I would have actually like gone in a much steeper niche. So I would try to find like I'm great at .NET developers, or I'm great at cloud developers or cloud architects, that, and just find like a specific area instead of like, yeah, we help out with all tech recruitments. Because if you help out one client with, let's say, a cloud developer, then the next step would be, oh, well, we need to find this now. Can you help us out? And then you start to get broader and broader. And so I would say definitely, like, if I would have done it again, I would have started off with just like one type of thing inside of tech, not trying to be the broad developer that can find anything, because it's a hard time too. So like in my early stages, I was actually finding embedded developers, which is actually a pretty tough role to fill out. Especially like starting off, you have to like understand exactly what it is that the client is looking for and so on. So embedded hardware, like both with some hardware knowledge, but also like some software knowledge. So that was my actual first role that I was looking for. And then afterwards, it was a full stack role inside of Node and React. And then everything just started falling into space. And right now, I would say like the thing that I'm absolutely best at would be cloud architects, actually. That is something that I have a really broad network inside of. So I would say like that's my bread and butter. Cloud architects, both in like Azure, AWS, and GCP, and some local cloud aspects here in Sweden.
For someone that doesn't have a technical background before doing technical recruiting, what did you do on the side to learn as much about these positions as possible, so that you come off as someone who knows what he's talking about when you're talking to these candidates, right? your first job, embedded hardware stuff, like that's very technical. That's very complex. So like, did you wing it, Zach, or did you actually like read up a lot on the side to kind of educate yourself? Like, what did you do?
I read a lot about it. Like, it's hard to wing these type of roles. It's really hard. So I looked on YouTube a lot, like, everything from understanding like different aspects, like what is C++, what is embedded, what is TypeScript, what is JavaScript, like what are the difference between them, what is Node.js, it's a framework, like what is a framework, and like everything surrounding that, just starting to understand the whole aspect. And there is a lot of good people inside of YouTube that actually explain it in a good matter that is not too technical, but still pretty technical, so that you can understand and get your way surrounding that. I also, as I told you before, my father has worked as a developer and project leader. So I got a lot of help inside of that. My grandmother was one of the, how do you call it, like education people at Kulturhua, that is one of the biggest schools here in Stockholm for especially like civil like engineering and stuff like that. So she was main of the electronics program, so I got a lot of like experience from her, like especially when I was looking for like embedded engineers, like she started to help out, like mapping it out, helping me to understand how the stages work. So basically just studying a lot on the side, especially when going into a client meeting, especially like a first meeting, just knowing everything about the role that they're looking for, because they usually tell you like, yeah, we're looking for this. And then just study as much as you can and try to sound reasonable when you talk to them. And so that is mostly how I learned. And then just like, it's an everyday thing, still keeping up with like the different thing that's going on in the tech space at all times.
Yeah, especially in technology where things change a lot, right? You just have to be familiar with the new frameworks, libraries, languages, especially in the software world, all the time. And so I'm really happy that you also said it. It's very hard to wing. It's if you start winging it, people smell BS, right, coming out, you're immediately going to lose all credibility with clients, candidates, and that's not a good thing, right? So if you don't have a technical background, you just have to do whatever you can, leverage resources, your network, and just read, watch videos, and just be a sponge as much as you can to sound like what you're doing. In the early days as well, like starting any business, right? Like you have to pay for things. And so like, what do you remember kind of like how much you guys were paying per month for tools or just to even like operate your business? And like, what was the most expensive like tool that you spent on in the early days?
Well, that's actually like a fun thing. Well, mm-hmm. I tried, of course, to keep the cost down. Like starting off your first company, like you first off have to settle down some money for yourself to be able to still have a livable kind of wager. So I had off almost a full year. Salary for myself, so that I could just focus on one thing and one thing at a time. So that was like the first thing, setting off that type of money. And then afterwards, in Sweden, to start a company, you have to put down, it's like $2,500. So you have to put down that as a capital for the stocks, because what you have in Sweden is a stock company. You can almost call it like that. So it's a company that is its own legal company, and you own stocks inside of it. So you have to put down that type of capital, but you can still use that capital for like different stuff that aren't for like everyday use. So if you want to buy a computer out of it, for example, you can do that because it mm-hmm. still holds kind of its value. And so on. So it's like a capital that you put into the company to start off. So that is the first thing. And then after that, I started off with LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn, I usually I go away from the storm. I started off with LinkedIn Recruiter. felt like that didn't really work out with the way that I was working. So I actually do Sales Navigator right now. Feel like it can filter a lot better, especially with all the other systems that I'm working with integrated to LinkedIn. So it works out pretty good using the Sales Navigator front. But I started off with Recruiter. It was a bit more expensive. And then besides that, like building a website, having a domain, everything surrounding that, those are also costs. But that was actually basically mostly it. That was the things that I used when I started off, of course, like cell phone and so on. Like the most expensive I would say was LinkedIn Recruiter, like at a monthly cost. So yeah.
It hurts.
And then LinkedIn of course, Recruiter. Yeah, it does. And so that was what I started off. And then like, as the years go by, I started talking to different other recruiters and I kind of like started to figure out exactly what type of tools I wanted to use and put onto my toolbox. And but now I don't use that many tools. I have a couple of tools, but not like any extraordinary tools at all.
Sure.
I keep my tool bag pretty small so that I don't get overwhelmed with how many things I have to work with. So I try off like every 3 months, I try something new and see if it works, but like at a smaller base. But usually I just stick to the three different things that I use.
You guys like use an ATS?
No.
That's the thing, right? Like I think with me, when I started, Zach, like I was like you, I want to keep my costs as low as possible. So I didn't use ATSs in the beginning. I didn't use any of these fancy tools. I honestly just use Google Sheets, Excel, Google Docs, and that's it. And I think it's possible to a certain extent if you're very organized, right? But the functionality is very limited, especially with Google Docs. Like it's just hard. It's not the best way to organize anything. But yeah, I think on the staffing side, like in our business, it's very easy to be overwhelmed with all the options out there, right? Yeah. It's like as soon as you Google like best sourcing, best ATS, best outreach or whatever, it's like hundreds of stuff out there. And you can just sink in so much time and money wasting just going through these. I still think it's a good idea to allocate small time to check on new things like you do, which is something I do as well. But yeah, even like the tech stack I use, it's very, very lean, very simple. We don't really need that much more on top of that. Do you have like a favorite tool that you use? A favorite plugin or something, like either on the client side or the candidate side, that's like your favorite at the moment?
Well, no, I use an automation tool called Expandy, which is a really good automation tool, especially for doing outreaches. I don't use it to like a broad extent, but I usually so that I usually get like a first interaction with people, especially on the candidate side. So that I would say I built like I have this full like cycle in it, which is one of the best tools that I use right now. It's super easy to integrate because like as I told you, my main thing that I work with is LinkedIn, so it's the perfect like plugin for LinkedIn. It helps me out, like especially when I was doing everything manually. It helps me out almost like 4 hours a day. Just like doing things like that. So right now, like just doing the sourcing side out of it, it cuts out so much time doing that first interaction with people. So instead I get more structured because the people that I source, I can source them into different like lead groups in a better way than I did before. When I just doing like outreach and looking at my newest contacts, that was like the first way that I started off, like getting new connections and then contacting them after I got a connection and then going through the cycle. But that I've been able to automate a lot more, which actually helps out a whole lot.
When it comes to outreach for clients, from your experience, is it more effective to reach out to them via in-mail, email, or cold calling?
I would say it is the in-mail side of it is a lot better, especially in Sweden. It's especially in the tech industry. Cold calling hasn't really been that effective the latest 1-2 years because they get so many calls usually. And if you don't know the person, it becomes really hard. So I would say definitely just writing to people as a first interaction, because then you will get back. Hopefully you get a response, and then it starts to become a hot lead or someone that you've interacted with. So I would say that's the most effective, especially time-wise, because as you know, calling 100 people in a couple of days takes out a lot of time, especially like leaving messages to people, calling them again, like doing your whole sales cycle and then keeping track of them to call them in a couple months again, like everything surrounding that, it takes a lot of time, especially when you're by yourself. It's almost like being a full-on call center by yourself, and it takes a lot of time for yourself, but it's a really good tool to have, and being able to cold call and not feel like it's the end of the world or it's something hard to do.
I think that's the biggest point, Zach. Like, I think depending on your industry, it might make more sense for you to in-mail, it might make sense for you to email or maybe cold calling. But if you're going to work for yourself, you have to be comfortable doing all of the things, right? I think if you are afraid to email, if you are afraid to cold call, you should not be in business. You should not be trying to start a freelancing or solo business at all. Like, if you can't bring in new businesses, but you also need to be comfortable talking to people on the candidate side. I think recruiting is like, we're talking to people all the time, whether it's clients or candidates. First of all, if you're afraid to talk to people, recruiting is probably not for you. But on the staffing side, if you can't even do basic sales things, if you're afraid of picking up the phone and calling someone, whether or not that may be effective or not, then you have to probably rethink like if you should be working for yourself, because working for yourself is probably going to be the hardest thing anyone will ever do. And if you're just starting out, you have no choice but to make it happen. And one of the easiest tools, and again, depending on industry, is you have to be comfortable with the phone. Right.
Yeah.
And so like, I just found it very commendable, like with you, like you never really had a whole career in sales, but you were able to develop, you know, a confidence, it's the inner confidence within you, whether it's through the military, ice hockey, or other earlier experiences in your life where you're like, you know what, I just need to make it happen, pick up the phone and start calling. You can learn over time if that's not as effective as in-mails or emails. But the fact that you just took action, I think that's the most important thing. And that's what a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. There's a lot of people that I know that they'll have a really tough time talking on the phone, like in the first stage. Like once they're comfortable with the person, it's super easy to talk to them. But I know sometimes when you talk to a candidate, I know that with some clients that I work with, I always tell them, well, call them instead of sending a text or something like that. Call them. They will be. It will be a whole different interaction. I can feel that they're a bit like scared with it, like being a bit pushy, like especially I'm usually the pushy one, but sometimes the candidate has to be the pushy one. Like I've got this counter offer right now. I have to tell them, but it can be like a tough time to say it by themselves. I usually like lead them towards saying it because it's a lot better coming out of the candidate's mouth than coming out of my mouth, because then it just sounds like I'm trying to push the deal forward. No, it's actual facts, and it's not natural, especially not for developers, because that's not their line of work. That's not what they do every single day. But just coming out of that comfort zone helps out a lot, and you feel good about yourself afterwards. Even if you got, I know, like the first time you're cold calling, like calling 50 leads and 25 don't pick up the phone, of those 25 that actually pick up the phone, you get like 23 no's, and then you probably book one or two meetings. That's a tough thing to go through, but it's something that you have to go through to be able to get exposure of those tough times.
I agree. When I started in recruiting, it was about 2014, 2015, cold calling was still very prevalent in tech. When I joined, it was all cold calling, hardly no email, surprisingly. And then they started just doing emails right when I left the company. But yeah, in tech, especially if you work a lot with startups, number one, a lot of them won't even have phone numbers. Like, and if they do, it's just the customer service number. So there's no ways to really call the founder or the hiring manager unless, you know, you luck out with some plugins or whatever. So obviously emails and emails make the more sense. But I think larger companies, more enterprise, legacy companies still have phone numbers, still have like, you know, address books that you can kind of directories that you can, you know, call into individual phone. But I think it's shifting a lot more to emails and emails for sure. But I just kind of want to get your perspective. Now, I want to ask, like, what would you say is your biggest advice to the audience for reaching out to clients, for sourcing candidates, and the third thing, like managing a desk, right? Where like you have to juggle a lot of things, a lot of interviews at the same time. What would you say, like, you know, your advice to other recruiters who are listening right now, or maybe other recruiters who are just starting out? Like, what would you say from your experience would be something that you think would be very helpful on the client side, candidate side, and just managing the whole interview process?
Yeah, of course. So when I started off, with like an Excel sheet, like just on the candidate side. So I started off with an Excel sheet where I had the company names that we were helping out recruiting, and just went down from there, and then had like lead, if it was a candidate lead, and then from there, just working myself over there, like presentive to the client in interview stage, as like first or second interview, and just put a note on it, like what time they have the interview and so on. And then just moving forward, like if they got an offer, what type of offer it was and so on, just putting notes on it. And then if we won it or lost it, just to keep track of like how many wins we have and how many losses we have during a year, just to understand for yourself like how hard it actually can be. Like you have to go through the whole stage out of it. So that is on the candidate side what I did first, and now I've just done exactly the same thing, but I have it on a Trello board instead. So like still keeping the cost low and using a Trello board to move the candidates super easy and super super smooth. So I built it like by myself, so that it could be integrated with like myself. And then I used Excel at the same way with the client side out of it. So I started off with like a whole lot of companies that I found off the internet and so on. I usually try to find like either a CEO position or a CTO position. And from there, just finding different type of contact info, if it is a mail, a telephone number, or if I got them through a contact via LinkedIn. And then from there, just working myself down, and then the whole stage. So have I called them? Yes, no. Have they picked up? Have they answered my in-mail and so on? And then just moving it forward. Well, I got in touch with them. They weren't interested right now. Well, I'll call them in 3 months again, or I'll get in touch with them in 3 months again and see how it's looking. And then if they wanted to be in, like, if it was okay for me to send them in emails and so on, et cetera. And then, like, finally, like, just some kind of notes inside of it. Like, what did we talk about? And what was good? What wasn't good? And now I do the exact same thing, but with a Trello board. So that is basically, like, how I'm handling it right now. It doesn't have to be that complicated either, especially when I don't have to report to someone higher up. Like I report to myself and I understand my statistics by myself. So as of right now, it works out fine. But once you start building a team surrounding yourself, you have to have someone to report to and see like what stages you're looking for. And then it can become a lot better at like using some type of software, like a CRM software and so on. Mm-hmm. But that is basically like how I'm handling it right now. And also like I have like the database side of it, like different candidates, I put them in different aspects and different folders so that I always have them structured. So if I would need like, if I get from a client, like we're looking for a .NET developer, 6 years experience, perfect. Then I have a folder for that. Mm-hmm. And so on. So from there, I can work myself out of it.
Nice. Again, you don't have to be, you know, super complicated mm-hmm. about this stuff. What is your favorite thing about recruiting today, Zach? And what is one thing that you're like, oh, you know, like it still kind of gets underneath your skin, or like a pet peeve of yours?
I would say my favorite thing is definitely like the first interviews. Like, I think those are super fun to do, especially talking to a new person, like being able to showcase something that probably is a lot more fun than what they're doing in the present and something that interests them. So I would definitely say like the first interview stage is like one of the funnest part, because you get to know a new person through a Zoom or a Teams call. Like, you get to know a person, and that is something that I actually love the most. And then, of course, I love when we're getting to the end parts of the interviews stages, like when it's going to the deal part, like when you start talking back and forth, like and you got to build a bigger interest, especially in the candidate side. Like, yeah, it sounds like a good deal. Like, what are your thoughts surrounding that? Like, how are your thought process and so on? And still keeping them interested during that stage is definitely one of the most fun parts, I would say. The least fun part, of course, there are some, is actually, I would say, either the sourcing part it's a tough time. Like, scrolling through people's profiles, seeing could they be a match, like doing different descriptions, adding them, or like sending them an email. That type of process it's a tough one actually to take a hold of. So I would say either the sourcing part, or like when you have to like go of a candidate, like they didn't pass towards the stage, mm-hmm. and you kind of hear the tough side of it. They probably felt really good during the interview, and you have to tell them that it didn't work out during the interview, especially if you sometimes get like a weird response from the client side of it. Like, you don't get a full response, like why they don't want to proceed with the candidate and so on. That can be a tough time, usually, I would say.
Yeah, never easy thing to share. Not the best news to candidates. Now, let's switch gears and mm-hmm. talk about fun stuff. So what is the biggest placement that you've ever done on your own desk, commission-wise?
Commission-wise, we had one placement that was, let's say, just right around $25,000.
Wow. That's awesome. Is that 20, sorry, 25, is that translate to US dollars, or is that 25 Swedish?
No, translated to US dollars.
Nice. That's awesome. And then what is the biggest month that you've done on your own desk?
It's 40,000 in one month. Now, 40,000 US in one.
I remember you, we talked about this before, like how you calculate commissions is a little bit different from Sweden to US. Like, here we just do gross. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of numbers that you're sharing with me right now is like after taxes. Is that correct?
It's kind of after taxes, because in Sweden, when you do a price, let's say that the commission is, let's say, $10,000to make it easy. So you have $10,000, which is what you put in, what you bill out, what you put the invoice, and then on those 10,000, it becomes 25% in taxes. So what you get into your company is 12,500, but those 2,500 that you get into your company goes to taxes or and so on. So that is like the way that I would say it.
Cool. So 25,000 for what position was that for? You said it was a cloud developer.
Yeah, a cloud developer.
And then 40,000, how many positions was that?
That was on two positions.
Nice.
In one month. So
that's awesome.
So that was a really good month, actually. It was, both were at the same company also. So it was a really good month for both us and the client side of it.
Amazing. And do you have any data how long it typically takes you to fill a position?
Yeah. Well, from when we got that position, it took us, I think we got it in September and it was filled out in November. So it took us right around 2 months.
Amazing.
To fill it out.
Was that your fastest? So
it was, I would say, yeah, that might have been one of the fastest ones. But it was a pretty long process too. Like, it was a lot of back and forth in it. Usually when we close deals, they usually take around like 2 weeks. But that was a really long process. It was because it was going back and forth, because the candidate wasn't really, both the candidates weren't really sure, but at the end they went on with it, which was super cool actually. So it was a bit back and forth in it. But it worked out for us.
And what was like your longest position in terms of length?
Longest position, I would say it was, there's been a couple of long ones. I would say the embedded role was really long. It took us almost like 7-8 months.
Wow.
To fill out. So it was a long one, but there was a lot of people in the interview stages, but finally we figured one out.
You guys made it happen.
Definitely. So I would say either that position. Yeah, definitely that position.
Cool.
Was one of the longer ones.
Now, one of the topics that I just want to touch on before we end this is I now know that you have a team, right? So how big is your team right now? Are they full-time? Are they part-time? And how did you decide in what way to kind of compensate them?
Yeah. So what we do is we have consultants on the side that help out different companies with so we kind of like rent them out. So as of right now, we have three of them doing different type of things. So one of them is a product owner at one of the bigger companies in Sweden that works with the telecom industry. And so he owns one of the products there and has two teams under him that he helps out. Half of the one of the teams sits here in Sweden and one of the teams sits in the Baltic in some country down there. The other one is a database developer. So he works with different aspects inside of the database for a tobacco company here in Sweden. Actually works towards a database developer in the United States, which is pretty cool. And the third one is a AI developer, or he does a lot of like NLP, but basically focus on Java.
You have like anyone helping you with like sourcing on the candidate side or anything like that? Or is it just mainly you? You have a business partner?
No, it is mainly me doing the candidate sourcing at full time. I help out with two different freelancers that we do splits and so on. So we kind of cooperate like we're under the same flag, but nice. It's some flexibility in between actually. So those are the ones that I usually cooperate with, and it's perfect because we're in the same boat and we take almost like the same commissions. And so on. So it becomes like a perfect fit for both of us, actually.
And what are your kind of aspirations moving into the future, Zach? Are you looking to stay within the Swedish market? Are you looking to branch out to other parts of Europe, different markets? Like, do you have any thoughts?
Well, yeah, of course. It would actually be fun to branch out into different aspects inside of the international market. I would definitely want to start off like going a bit more towards the Norwegian market because there is especially post pandemic, they've been working a lot with remote positions, which is really helpful because then we can recruit inside Sweden also and help out Swedish developers that want to come to Norway, and they have a good tech atmosphere there too. So definitely start to branch out in Norway a bit more. Besides that, I would love to try to fill out a position in the US someday. That would be really cool, especially like I know that I get some developers that are willing to move to the US and are like looking for different positions over there. And especially some companies in Sweden are starting to take their companies, especially bigger startups are taking their companies. I've seen a couple of them going to like Austin, Texas. It's starting to become like a tech mecca over there. So taking their companies and bringing some developers there. So I've seen a lot of people that are interested to check positions over there, which is really cool actually. So definitely like I would love to do like across the world, especially help out Swedish developers and want to move abroad or work towards a more international based company. That would be a cool thing.
That's awesome. And then how many hours do you work on average per day? Do you work well into the night, or you try your best to kind of have a good work-life balance?
I try to have a good work-life balance, and that doesn't mean that I do like office hours at all time. It all depends when like candidates answer when I can schedule like calls, because some candidates don't want to schedule a call during business hours. And you have to be respectful of that also. So then sometimes it has to go into the night. So I usually like around the terms, like around 8 hours every day is what I try to fill out. So some days it can be like, I usually try to start off at 9 in the morning and try to finish off around like 5:30, somewhere around there. And but some days, of course, like candidates answer during nighttime. Well, I try to provide my best and help out during nighttime as well, because it can be some really good leads that you get during those times. And because that's when people maybe answer your emails or your LinkedIn messages and so on. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's pretty flexible. As of right now, I try to do like 9 to 5, because I usually play hockey from 6 to 9 every night. So I have to like be ready to go on the ice and not have to think about like everything surrounding that. And then sometimes after practice, I sit on my phone and just answer messages.
Yeah, we're a relationship business, right? So if you have a rock star candidate, but they're not available till later in the evening, you might just have to make time. Or if you have a client that can only talk in the evening, you might have to make time. And that kind of comes with the territory of recruiting, right? We're kind of like a concierge, white glove service for both sides. And you just got to do what you have to do to keep it going. But
yeah.
Zach, I really appreciate your time. And I think it's very, very cool to hear a lot of overlapping, similar experiences and stories from someone who's in a completely different part of the world than I am. And it's very commendable to see like how you got into this industry with no prior experience. And you're just really able to just get in there, make it happen, survive the hardest first year, the first probably 6-12 months. And now to see you kind of having and finding a good place for yourself in the Swedish market, soon Norwegian market, maybe a little bit in the US market in the future. If there's one big overarching advice that you want to give to the audience, whether they're already established recruiters or people who are looking to come into recruiting or staffing, what would that be?
I would definitely say like try to find a small way inside of it. So if you're doing tech recruitment, try to find a broader niche. So like I want to do only .NET, senior .NET developers. That's the only thing. And try to build your database out of it and start small, and then everything will just pile up and become bigger. Start with a small thing, and you don't have to go overwhelming with anything. Like you don't have to have fancy products or so on. Like build your network. That's your biggest value out of it.
If people want to reach out to you for advice or anything, where can they find you?
On LinkedIn. That's the best way to get in touch with me, Zach Frost on LinkedIn. I always try to answer as many people as possible, and especially if you need help in anything, just reach out.
Well, Zach, this has been absolutely perfect. It's been wonderful chatting with you, getting to know you and your background better, and excited to see how we can possibly work together, help each other out into the future, and very impressed with everything that you've done, and just want nothing more than for you to continue to crush it and surpass all of your wildest goals and dreams moving forward.
Thank you so much, Preston. It's an honor to talk to you. As I told you before, like I've been watching your videos a whole lot, and they really help out a lot. So you definitely are doing great work, and it's an honor to be here with you.
Thanks, Zach. The honor is mine too. So I really appreciate it. We'll definitely keep in touch.